Welcome to the Healing Bloom, a safe place to grieve. Our goal is to create an atmosphere around the topic of grief that is real, exploratory, and inviting. Inviting because we want to normalize conversations around death, dying, grief, and bereavement that are relatable to everyday experiences. Join me today in this deep conversation.
Welcome back to another episode of Healing Bloom. I am Tamara Houston, your host, psychotherapist, and certified grief specialist. We are joined today by Leah Forney. And today we are going to be talking about cumulative grief. And I will share a little bit about that in a moment. But first, I want to introduce Leah to the audience. Leah Forney is an 8-time published author, sexual assault thriver turned advocate and activist, filmmaker, and transformative speaker. She spent the last 4.5 years intentionally healing after burying 5 loved ones in 1 year. On her healing journey, she discovered the power of redefining her life after loss. So I'm so thankful for Leah coming on today and sharing with us on this topic. And I use the term cumulative grief, which means that you are working through more than one loss at a time. Some people may even refer to that as being complicated grief, but there's, you know, maybe another component that goes to that. But I just want to hop in and allow Leah time to share her story, because I think this story is going to be transformative in itself. So thank you for coming on to Healing Bloom today, Leah. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Tamara. So yeah, cumulative grief. That's a good word. I think for a long time I was calling it like compartmentalized grief.
That too. You got to compartmentalize, I suppose. That's a lot to deal with, certainly.
Yeah. So my grief journey, I started in 2018, May 14, 2018. My fiance at the time unexpectedly passed away. I never forget it. I was asleep. He happened to pass out in the bathroom. His sister came and woke me up and was like, hey, what's going on with Joseph? Like, he's passed out in the bathroom. He won't move. And he had some health challenges. Like, he dealt with seizures. So immediately that's what we were thinking. We're not thinking like he's dead. We're thinking like maybe he didn't have a seizure or something happened. So I immediately jump up, rush to the bathroom, and I knew in my heart, like my spirit, I'm a very spiritual person. And it was like in that moment, God was saying to me, like, he's going to transition. But I also knew, because I had a medical professional background, like I was a CNA at one point. So I knew things like labored breathing and when that moment was happening. And so I always tell people he waited for me, because it was just like that few seconds before his transition, like you could tell he was holding on till I got to him. And I never forget in the moment, and it was probably an out of body experience, Tamara, to be honest. I remember just praying over him, and I said to him, it's okay to let go. Like when I think about that now, 5 years later, I'm kind of like, that's crazy that you, but that was just what happened. And so right after that, he let go. And so by that time, the ambulance had got to the house, and that's when they had declared that he had passed. It was the most out-of-body experience of my life. And I say that because it was a different kind of loss. So there's a, you know, we experience loss from like a parent dying or a friend dying. But when it's your fiance, when it's someone that you were on this journey to like build the rest of your life with, dying, I feel like it just hits way different than if it was like any other kind of loss. Mm-hmm. And so when he passed away, I found myself really struggling with an identity again, because this was someone I spent 2 years of my life with. We were building, you know, leading up to marriage. In fact, the day before he died, I had finally got him to agree to a destination wedding, because we were going back and forth about that for a while. And so I would say the surrealness of his death, like as long as his body was in the house before they took him out, like it just didn't register with me that the ambulance had just said he had passed. Like it was just like, no, he in the house on the floor asleep. Like I think that's where my mind just went. It wasn't until the moment that they wheeled his body out in that black bag that it just like hit that he was gone. And I remember, because by this time his family is being notified, they're coming to the house, so people are just coming from all over. People are calling my phone. You know, like, it's just a lot happening at one time. And my best friend, he happened to be on the phone at the moment that they wheeled his body out. And I just let out this gut-wrenching scream. And I hit the floor. And I'll never forget, because his father was sitting there. And all I could remember was hearing his dad say, "Someone get Leah. Like, someone get her." And so, like, EMT kind of just stopped. And they were like, "Do you want to see him before we take him?" Like, it just was this. It was like being in a Twilight Zone. Like, that's the best way I could, because it was just like, is this my life? Like, is this really happening right now? Like, we, at the time, Joseph was 30 years old, you know, like, in my mind, I'm like, you 30, you know, like, how is this happening? And so when they took him, that was the moment that it was just like, okay, it's starting to click that he's not coming back. And I didn't necessarily know how to even begin to deal with that. So I found myself driving a lot. And I tell people, I know now, when your emotions are high, do not drive. Do not operate. No, you know, but for me, the driving was kind of my way of escaping the reality, because the more that I was at the house, the more that family was showing up, the more that people were coming by to share the condolences, that when the funeral home posted the tent outside the home, and it was just too many reminders that he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not ready to deal with this. So I'm going to take these drives. And, you know, his father would be like, "Leah, stop. You got to stop driving. You got to." And it was, but driving was just, I don't want to deal with this. I don't want to face the fact that the man that I spent 2 years of my life with and really like was building a whole life with is now no longer here.
Mm-hmm.
So his death was very rough to navigate, on top of the fact that I was navigating it with very minimal support, because my family was in New York. I was in South Carolina at the time.
Oh, okay.
So everybody that I was connected to there was his people, right? And so even though they tried their hardest to be like, "Oh, let's try to be there and support her because this is the woman he's been with," I still felt very alone, because mm-hmm. I didn't have none of my people. I didn't have none of my friends. Like, all my friends and family were in all different states. Yeah, they were calling and checking on me, but I still had to go through that process alone.
Mm-hmm.
And it was hard. It was very, very hard, because, again, I'm feeling like we're in a Twilight Zone. We buried him a few days later. And even just that, you know, they always say funerals and weddings bring out the worst in people.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so yeah, so having to even deal with that, you know, unfortunately it was his funeral that his mother and his sister decided to show their behinds. You know, they left me, they, you know, didn't allow me to ride with the family. So I had to find a ride to the funeral home. They, you know, excluded me from his obituary. You know, like, yeah, it was just a lot of things. And that made it even harder to grieve him, because I'm one of those people, like, when I feel disrespected, Houston, we got a problem, like, no pun intended, right? Like, but I'm kind of like, I'm from New York. So it's like, you know, you disrespect me, we have a problem. And in that moment, I could just hear Joseph's voice saying to me, like, just bow out, like, bow out gracefully, just, and it was hard, because I got all these people coming to me saying, "Oh my God, Leah, how they just leave you out the obituary? How they didn't allow you to speak?" And you're feeling the emotions of it. You're feeling right. The disrespect. You're feeling like, you know, he not here to protect them this time. Like, I could, you know, you're feeling all of that. But at the same time, is that what was going through my mind was, how do I honor him? Because all of it wasn't even about us in the begin with, you know, like, they made the funeral and all the services about them, but it was really about honoring Joseph. And so after that, the very next day, I actually left South Carolina. Like, I was just like, I knew for me, I could not grieve in the place, because I had moved to South Carolina to be with him. So I knew for me, I could not grieve in the place that we had shared. Mm-hmm. Like, I needed to get away and get into a different atmosphere and a different space in order for me to start the journey of grieving. Mm-hmm. So
That's a grief experience too, though. Like, you know what I mean? I'm just thinking about Beyonce planning. Like, there are some immediate things that are coming up that are not going to happen now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's the death of a person, but the death of the life that you were actively planning.
Actively.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just the death of my identity, you know, going from I'm a fiance to now I'm single. I ain't been single in a long time. Don't know, you know, like just all of those deep layers of that comes with grief and loss that I think a lot of times we don't really think about, nor do we talk about. Cause mm-hmm. I think a lot of times when we hear grief and loss, we immediately just think of the loss of the person.
Right.
But the person that is experiencing it, there's a lot of layers of loss, you know, going from two parent, you know, two income household to that one income household, mm-hmm. you know, having to make that decision to be like, I'm just packing up everything and leaving, you know, like.
Right. So quickly.
Yeah. Like it was just a lot. So I ended up moving to Maryland, and I probably was in Maryland maybe a couple of months. So Joseph passed away in May. Actually, this May 14th just made 5 years. So he passed away in May. And then I probably was in the state of Maryland maybe a couple of months. So September was of that same year, I dealt with a second death. So one of my dearest friends, who actually was one of the very first people I called when Joseph died, she was trying to get out of an abusive marriage. And unfortunately, her husband took her life. And so I got that phone call from friends and family of hers. And I was just, again, just like, I always say 2018 and 2019 was one of those years where it was like, I can't make this stuff up. Like mm-hmm. because it was just every 4 to 5 months, someone was dying. Like, it was just one of those years. And so getting that phone call while you're still trying to navigate a very fresh loss, it was just one loss after another. And I didn't know how to deal with it, you know. And then when I fast forward a few months after her, you know, my brother's best friend, who was like another brother to me, he completed suicide. Then my dad died. Then Joseph's dad died. So it was like literally five deaths in 1 year. And I had made a decision in October of 2018, which was actually the day that I started going to therapy, was on Joseph's birthday, which was October 18th. And I had made a decision that I was like, okay, I need to talk to somebody, because by that time I'm living here in Maryland. I'm still feeling very isolated, not really feeling as much supported. And what really triggered the moment for me to go to therapy was, again, driving behind the car, having a whole grief experience, and I blacked out. Wow. And the thing that woke me up was hearing the blaring sound of the other car's horn. And we were literally seconds from a head-on collision. And in that moment, and I'm a very spiritual person, like, God said to me, are you going to deal with your grief and loss? Because it's dealing with you.
Mm.
And in that moment, I just had to surrender and was like, I don't even know how to deal with it. Like, this is just so much. The weight of this is so much. I don't even know how to deal with it. But because I had already had a mental health background, I got my master's in marriage and family therapy, I'd been in the field, I was like, the one resource I knew know to do is go to therapy.
Right.
So I found me a therapist and I started going to her. And I was very, very particular about having a Black female therapist, because it was just, for me, I can have certain conversations with people that look like me and they'll get it. Mm-hmm. Not to say that there are not culturally competent other races that can handle, you know, the Black experience, but I just wanted that. So I found me an amazing Black female therapist. And what she helped me to really see was that I had been grieving my whole existence. Like, I always say Joseph's death was the catalyst to get me into therapy, to peel back the layers of the grief that I had been carrying even as a child, because I'm the daughter of two addicts. Both my parents weren't in my life. My dad was incarcerated. So she helped me to see, even though I was going to therapy, because I'm like, I just experienced these losses and I need to, you know, to process it. But she also helped me to peel back the layers of all the losses that I had never processed. So I had this compound, like you said, cumulative grief that was way before Joseph. It was from little girl Leah to present day.
That is so interesting. I say to people all the time, in trying to illustrate how our bodies deal with stress, at some point, this is the only vessel you have, right?
Yeah.
There's either going to be an implosion or explosion. Like, you can only deal with so much. And that car ride that day is like, your body was like, look, I done told you. I'm just gonna go ahead and disassociate, because basically that's what happened. But all of these losses within like the 2018, 2019 year was like, really, that was the tip of the iceberg.
Yep.
So the therapist helping you to realize that you've been climbing this iceberg for a while though.
Yeah.
And like, life is life. So, you know, we just be thinking we out here handling it. It's just, you know, one more thing to add. It's not as bad as this. So we just keep going. So that's really interesting too, just from like the standpoint of like somatically what happens to us with grief. It feels like, I said this too during the pandemic, if, especially like the beginning of the pandemic, if our body experienced all that was going on, like fully experienced all that was, we would have been dropping like flies.
Oh yeah.
Because it was just so much, right? It's so much loss. So just so much trauma that was happening, that there has to be a way to ventilate. Otherwise, that's the option: implosion or explosion.
Yeah.
That's what happens. Wow. That's something else. So this accumulation, you get to a point where you're in therapy and you're realizing, hey, this has been, I've been on this train for a minute.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're on the train. Like, you're like, what do I do now? Like, what is the next stop for you in terms of healing? Where do you go from there?
Yeah. So for me, what therapy really helped me to do was reconnect with my emotions. Because I grew up how I grew up, not having my parents, being in a dysfunctional environment, like I was in survivor mode my entire existence. So I was numb. Like and you asked me to say how I feel. I go to, you know, I'm good, I'm fine, you know, like, but like deep diving into feelings, like I just couldn't do it. I was extremely numb. And my therapist really helped me to see that. And what was the catalyst for even that was, I remember her sitting there one session and she asked me, like, what makes you happy, Leah? What fulfills you? And I couldn't answer the question. And like the tears just started like flowing, because my definition of happiness and fulfillment was the accolades, the people I knew, the places I've been. Like, that was it. It was what people said I was good at, or what people told me. Like, it wasn't who I was at my core. And when she asked me that question and I couldn't answer it, I just cried. And I remember her saying, you know, this is the first time you've cried in session. Because I would take in every session, I would take in what she said, go home or on my drive home or when I'm processing and let it out. But it was this feeling, you know, me feeling like, I'm strong. I'm supposed to be a strong Black woman. We're not going to do this.
We're not going to see it. Witness.
Yeah. We're not going to do all that. And that was the moment that I knew I, one, had a safe space with my therapist, but then also like, I do feel. And so being on that train helped me to like start reconnecting with my emotions, start reconnecting with my feelings. And it helped me to start figuring out, what does my new life look like? Because now I'm not a fiance. What is it that I want? What is it that, you know, I went in this space of rediscovery, because I'm that part of my life is no longer. So what is it that I want now? And I think what helped me on that journey, and this was what my therapist helped me with too, was she would always say to me, no matter what you decide in your new journey or your new life, know that Joseph would want you to be happy. And for a very long time, I had struggled with that because, like, I used to tell people, it's easy to explain, like in dating, for example, it's easy to explain, oh, my last relationship just didn't work out, right? It's a little difficult to say, oh, he died. You know what I mean? Like, that's
right.
That's a little harder to explain. Mm-hmm. And so for me, what kept me almost stuck for a little bit was that I just was like telling myself, well, we didn't break up. You know, like I'm supposed to, you know, mm-hmm. we're supposed to still be like, we're technically still together, even though he's not physically here. And so I had to go in this like space of defining, redefining. And that actually, what that really looked like was, so one of the things that I refused to have looked at when Joseph died and I moved to Maryland and I was in therapy, two things actually, I couldn't look at his obituary. And I had a box in the trunk of my car that had like all our wedding stuff. So like our save the dates, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I like literally when I moved into my apartment, I pulled every box out, everything out but that box. And I had told myself the day that I could look at his obituary and open that box is the day that I know that I'm really ready to really begin to get on the other side of this grief. And so when that day happened, which was probably like almost a year later, I knew, I was like, okay, I'm now at that place where I'm ready to really start to move closer to acceptance. And even just that, learning that, you know, we talk about the stages of grief and people, it's almost like it's, people think it happens like that, like denial.
Right.
No, like it doesn't right. come it like, like it, like it doesn't go like that. Like I tell people, I'm a spiritual person. I was raised in the church, but I was angry as hell with God.
Uh-huh.
Like angry, like didn't want to pray, didn't want to talk to him, didn't want to worship. You know, would go to church. My pastors, people like Leah, you know, you shouldn't come to church. You're just in church and not talk. Ah, I'm not talking to him. I'm mad because he took the person I love. Like,
wow.
No.
Yeah.
But what helped me even in that was realizing that God could handle it. Mm-hmm. That if people can't handle the weight of it, he could. And that it was okay to say, God, I'm angry. I'm angry at you. I'm angry that you allowed this. Like, I'm angry. And so, yeah, I went through all of that, the different stages, being in denial. And what helped when I got to that place of acceptance, it was less about the acceptance of the reality that he was gone. It was more about accepting that now I get to write a new narrative, that now I get to rediscover who Leah is outside of a relationship. And so I committed myself to being on an intentional healing journey, not just from Joseph's death, but just the things that I didn't heal from childhood. And so I stayed single for like 4 years. Just working on me, because one of the things that I had vowed to myself was that if there was going to be a next, I did not want to bring the baggage and the issues from Joseph into that. Like, I wanted to know that I was coming into any next relationship the best version of myself.
Certainly. Yeah.
Before. And so, and I was like, and I owe it to that person. Now, I will say my therapist, and it was funny when she told me to do it, but later on, maybe probably 2 years, 3 years post Joseph's death, she had me do a list of like the ideal partner that I wanted, like who was this person at their core. And I thought she was crazy when she said it, because I was like, don't nobody write no list. Like, and she was like, yes, Leah, you should know what you want. And it was funny when I did that list, because what I wanted 3 years after Joseph's death at that time would have been way different than what I wanted before. And one of the things that I knew that I wanted in a partner was someone who had that similar experience. So I knew that if I was going to get into another relationship, I couldn't just be with someone who hadn't had the experience of what knowing what it was like to be in a committed relationship, engaged or married, and you lose that person. Because again, it's a different experience than if it's, oh, my friend just died. You know, it's a way different because you have a different connection to that person. So I knew that I wanted to be with someone who had that experience. And that ended up happening because here I am in a relationship with someone
because you wrote the list. You did
it. Right. Right. I know that now, but back then I was like, when she said it to me, I was like, ain't nobody writing those.
So that's the tip, audience. Okay. No.
So, but it started with, before I could write the list, what I had to do was, one, figure out who I wanted to be, what I needed, where I was, who I wanted to become. And then that helped me to determine what kind of partner I needed.
Right.
Because I didn't know those things. So that's why I said I've been on an intentional healing journey, because I wanted to continue to put, and I'm still, like I tell people all the time, I'm still peeling back the layers of my life. Mm-hmm. Like healing is not only intentional and a choice, but there's levels to it. Like just when you think you good, you know, God be like, ah, let's go deeper. And you like, how much more deeper do we need to go?
I love that you say that you talk about the acceptance, not just being about the acceptance of the death.
Yeah.
Because I think that there's like a wax and wane there, you know, just kind of like reality. I know it, but in my heart, I don't, you know what I mean? So that's a journey in itself. But how I took what you said, it's an acceptance that there's opportunity that comes after this. And I have found myself over my career, like at one point, apologizing for even talking about opportunity and grief. And then I just got to a point, I was like, no, I'm not apologizing for that anymore, because there is opportunity that comes out of that process. You don't go through this journey and are still on the journey. Like you talk, like I'm healing, but there's layers to it, and there not be opportunity. You never would see, you know, the person that you are and experience the things on the level that you do now without there being the fire and then opportunity.
Yeah.
It just wouldn't have happened that way, you know? And I think that has to be part of that acceptance is realizing nobody is sitting around asking for death, loss, whatever, to be on their doorstep. Nobody is. Mm-hmm. But when it happens, right, there's a lot of work that has to be done, because the person, the loved one, like is no longer there to like intervene.
You said a
moment ago, you was like, well, he ain't here now.
Right.
Protect him. He ain't here. So it's like, you got to step up in a different way. You know what I mean? And absolutely, sometimes you're able to do that in an appropriate way. And other times that it just shines a mirror on the areas in which you need to grow.
Right. Yeah.
In order to show up as like the best version of yourself.
Absolutely. I always say, I say the death changed me. And at first I used to think it changed me for like the worst, because I, you know, was in a very dark space, isolated, didn't want to connect, didn't want to get out of bed, depressed, you know, all of that. But when I started to allow myself to navigate through the journey and started to like talk myself out of bed and start to remind myself, like, regardless of this outcome, like Joseph would want me to be happy. Like he would not want this for me. I learned so much compassion. Like I tell people now, I can say that I'm so much more compassionate because of those deaths. I can say that I have a serious awareness of time. Like I used to be the person where, you know, if somebody came across my mind, I'd be like, oh yeah, I'm gonna get back to them. You know, I'm gonna call them in a day. Now I'm more like, if you come across my mind, like I'm stopping what I'm doing instantly and I'm reaching out, because there's a reason why you're coming across my mind. Like I have this profound awareness of time, and that it don't wait for nobody. Like your life can literally change in an instant. Like that is what, you know, I have more of awareness of love and the capacity to love. Like, my capacity to love people has grown tremendously after going through that experience. So that's why I always tell people there is life after loss. You yep. just got to be willing to be on the journey to discover the life after loss. Like, you got to be willing to be on the journey to discover what you're going to learn about yourself, because more than anything, you're going to learn a lot about you,
right?
And your capacity and your strengths. Like, I'm like, I can have conversations with friends and family now, 5 years later after Joseph, and they're like, Leah, I'm just in awe of like who you've become from that situation, because they know how devastating that was. But I think I felt like in those moments, I made a commitment not to myself, but I made a commitment to Joseph. And I always say to people, how you honor your loved one matters. So for me, making a decision to rediscover my life, to go on this intentional healing journey, to figure out who I wanted to be, is me continuing to honor him and honor the love that we had with each other. Mm-hmm. That's why I tell people, like I said, it just hit 5 years on Mother's Day, and people were waiting for me to like publicly say something. Someone asked me, they were like, oh, you didn't say nothing about it. And I was like, because I'm at the point where I no longer need to publicly say it. Like, I could wake up and be like, continue to rest in peace, Joseph. Like, I don't have to make it a public announcement.
Right. Right.
And that's a part of my acceptance, because there was a time where I felt like I had to publicly acknowledge him or publicly say something. Now I don't. You know, I tell people all the time, he's always around me. Like, I feel his presence. I notice little things that will make, and I'll laugh. I'll be like, all right, Joe, like, go somewhere. because again, me being a spiritual person, we're spiritual. Like, they never leave us. They leave us physically, but they'll never leave us. And so that was a part of my acceptance, realizing that he's not physically here. None of the losses that I experienced from 2018 and 2019, my dad's not physically here, but his presence is always around me.
Mm-hmm. So those relationships, they do continue. They look different, but they do continue. And like, I love what you're saying about just the way you honor someone. Like, it definitely makes a difference. That's a continuation of that relationship. And to your point about the next relationship, like if there's going to be a next, when that happens, is to learn something from the relationship that you had.
Yeah.
Even in the loss, you know what I mean? And it sounds like you did, like you learned so much about yourself and really being serious about how to love someone, how to show compassion towards someone. Because even in our best day, you know, in our relationships, like, we may not be the most compassionate, we may not be the most loved, but the thing is, when you've lost and so suddenly, no preparation, because I heard you say, like, basically, there was no, like, I was in a relationship one minute, and the next minute, I'm not. There's no closure.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it ain't like, it ended on, like, we ended on bad terms. Like, there was no closure.
Yeah.
So to figure out what does all that look like? What does it mean? What does that mean for my life? And what am I supposed to do with it?
Yeah. And I had to give myself closure. Like, when I left on that day after his funeral, I left in my mind, I was never coming back. I didn't go back to his grave to year three. And by then, my therapist was encouraging it. She was like, Leah, I think that this is going to help you with the acceptance. Because before, when she would bring it up, I'm like, ain't nobody going. I'm not, going back. But by year three, I was okay with going back, because I felt like the closure came with saying those things I didn't get to say, that I wanted to say, right, on the funeral day, because I'm over here trying to comfort everybody else and didn't have my moment. So when I made that trip back on the third anniversary of his death, I finally got to say what I didn't say. And it was funny, because I remember I knew he knew I was at his grave, because I just saw this like pretty butterfly, And it was almost like when I got there, it was like this sense of like, oh, you finally came, because, you know, I've been waiting. And I remember saying that like out loud, just laughing, like, I know what you're thinking.
Right.
Like, like, oh, you finally came back, because I've been waiting for this. But I needed that, because when I left South Carolina after experiencing that weekend, like, I left with the closure. And that was the other piece that I needed to continue to accept what had happened and to really begin to find life again after loss. Because once I had the closure, then I was open to dating. Then I was open to exploring the opportunity of somebody else being in my life. Mm-hmm. Even though my boyfriend didn't come to about a year and a half, 2 years later, but I was open to it by then.
Right, right, yeah. What advice do you give to someone who is experiencing cumulative loss in this way? So just multiple losses, and some of what you mentioned complicated as well and tragic. So what do you say to someone that is going through a similar experience in terms of like resources or just, I think, you know, sometimes we need maybe somebody to like take, we put ourselves on the hook. Like we're supposed to do, like we're supposed to do grief perfectly. And there's no perfect way.
No.
What do you say to someone that's going through this?
One thing I would say is give yourself some grace. Like when you are going through grief of any magnitude, you're going to have to give yourself some grace. You're going to have to practice self-compassion. You're going to have to literally take it one step at a time. Like, know that you might feel okay today, you might not feel okay tomorrow, like, and that's okay. The other thing I would say is don't rush yourself through the process. Like, I tried, and I promise you, y'all, it failed. I tried to rush myself through the process. I was just like, you know, that's the thing about healing. Like, we want to pick and choose the parts to heal from. Like, we don't want to really go through it. You know, we want to be like, come on, Jesus, can we talk about that, but let's not talk about that. You know, like, so you can't rush your process. Your process is your process. I will also say is don't let people rush your process, because you'll find that after 6 months, after a year, some people will feel like, oh, you should be over it by now. Like, why are you still talking about it? Like, no one can tell you when you are done grieving. So don't let people do that. Don't let people tell you that you're not grieving properly. Now, I will say there's unhealthy ways to grieve. And I tried that too, right? Mm-hmm. I tried to drink it away. That didn't really work either, right? So there are unhealthy ways to grieve, but figure out what works for you, what doesn't work for you. And then I would say, if you don't want to talk about it, it's okay. Because I think that even for people that are supporting someone through grief, I think we have this societal programming that we just supposed to know what to say, and that we're supposed to have advice, and that, you know, we're supposed to tell them some things. And that's hard. That's the hard part, is that sometimes, and I will say from my experience, one of the best moments with my friends were the moments where they came over, brought me some food, and we sat silently, or we watched a movie, and they did not ask, how are you doing? Do you want to talk about it? Like, those are the moments, especially in that first year, because the year of first is rough. When you go through your first holiday season without that person, your first birthday without that, like, it is hard. And so when I had people surrounding me, especially around Thanksgiving and Christmas and things like that, that were just like, I'm just going to come over. We're just going to hang out. Like, those were probably the best moments on my journey, because I didn't feel the pressure to talk about it. And so it's okay if you don't want to talk about it. But the last thing I would definitely say is get you a support system. Mm-hmm. Like, build you a solid support system. One of the things that me and my friends, and I love them for, was we had a code word. And that code word, if I texted to them, that was their way of knowing, okay, Leah's experiencing a wave of grief and she needs some support right now. And so have you a strong support system, have some people in your corner that is like, I'll walk with you through this journey, because it's a journey. Like, it is an absolute journey. And then definitely get you get some therapy. Like, it is okay, especially as people of color. Like, it's okay. Like, it's okay to go sit on somebody's couch. And if you're spiritual like me, I always say you can have the couch and the cross. Like, you ain't got to choose. Like, stop feeling like you got to pick between your relationship with God and, you know, the couch. Like, there's the reason why he gave you wisdom. There's a reason why he puts therapists and doctors and all that. Like, use wisdom. If you know that you can't go through this by yourself, stop trying to go through it by yourself.
Okay. Well, you preach then. Because that's if you know you can't, why are you doing it? It's really just kind of that simple. Why are you doing it? I love it. So in your bio, I mentioned that you are an author, you are a sexual assault thriver, advocate, activist, filmmaker. Mm-hmm. You got a lot going on. Any of that that you want to share with the audience that you think may be helpful, or just to be able to reach out to you if someone wanted to connect with you, how would they find you?
Yeah, so I tell people I'm on all the social medias as Leah M40. Mm-hmm. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Clubhouse, and all of them, Leah M40. I do have a Facebook community. It's called Pitch Like a Boss. It's for female entrepreneurs who really want to attract more media attention, increase their profits, and build their authority in their industry. So I do a lot of coaching in authority building in media because I've done it for the last 6 years. So that's just kind of what I do. So I always invite women entrepreneurs to come hang out over there. But you can always email me. info@leahmforney.com is probably the easiest way to email me. But yeah, I do. I wear a lot of hats. So I got sexually assaulted 9 years ago, and I decided that after going through that experience, and then it took them 8 years to test my rape kit. I decided that I was going to, when they called me, I said to God, I said, well, if I got to relive this part of my life, how do I make it bigger than me? How do I use it to speak up for other people? And so that's how I got into the activism and the advocacy, because I partnered with my federal coalition in Maryland against sexual assault, and just got an opportunity to share my story and train. And so my philosophy is that if you've gone through anything in life, you kind of have an obligation to help others through it, because there's someone somewhere that is feeling stuck in their grief, that's feeling stuck in the trauma, that's feeling stuck in the abuse that they've experienced. And so if you've experienced something and you survived and you are thriving through it, then I truly believe you should go back and help someone else through it. So that advocacy is what led to the filmmaker in me, because one of my dear friends, she has her own production company, and she's big on telling Black and Brown stories. And so we partnered together. Mm-hmm. And we did one documentary called Life After Loss, which talks about Black maternal health and that crisis and all the Black women that are, you know, unfortunately losing their lives by giving birth. Mm-hmm. And now we have our newest documentary that's coming out called The Forgotten, Unheard Stories of Black Women and Sexual Assault. So the trailer for that just released, and I'm super excited. And I can't wait till the documentary is out and ready for the world to see.
Wonderful. Listen, Leah Forney.
Yes, ma'am.
Is doing big things, okay? So please find her on all social media platforms. Please find her. Her links information will be in the post when this goes up. So I thank you so much for carving out time in your day to share with us on this topic of cumulative grief. It is certainly an important thing, and it's good to know what it is, because I think there are many more people that are experiencing cumulative grief and they don't realize what it is, you know. And just that piece of your story talking about how you've been on this journey for a while and didn't know it. Mm-hmm. And once you did all those things, like getting that support in place, getting your therapist and all that stuff in place, kind of realizing that there's more of a history there. So certainly she offered a lot of nuggets here. So please write this down, check it out. And I want to thank my audience for listening again today. Join us next month. Until then, you can find us on all of the podcast platforms to catch a previous episode. Thank you for listening to Healing Bloom, A Safe Space to Grieve.
Thank you.